well, one of the things I've been focusing on since I started really is like believe in yourself. And I know that sounds really like cliche and a bit, you know, soft or whatever, but there's a lot of times where I've gone into races or even into some of the training sessions and gone, like, I'm not going to finish this. Like, I'm not, you know, and this isn't for me, or maybe not this isn't for me, but this isn't the day for me to be doing well or whatever. And sometimes I try and make excuses and go like, oh, I've had a really hard day at work and I've done this and done that. But actually, I think like holding yourself accountable and believing in yourself and that you can do it and that you're doing it for, you know, you're doing it for yourself at the end of the day. Like, you're not getting paid to be a triathlete. So you just want to make sure you're enjoying it. And you don't enjoy it if you don't believe in yourself, if that makes sense, if you don't have the confidence in yourself. So I'd say, like, always back yourself.
That's age grouper Pip Paxman, and you're listening to Age Group Stories, brought to you by the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionfuelandhydration.com, who have a range of tools and products to help you personalize your fueling and hydration strategy so that you can perform at your best. You can get 15% off your first order with the code OA22 at precisionfuelandhydration.com. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm your host, Coach Rob Wilby, and every week I'll bring you an episode of this podcast to help motivate and hopefully inspire you. This week, I've got a great age group story for you. I've got Pip Paxman on. Pip has had a fantastic two seasons with us now. She's gone from never having done a triathlon to buying a bike and accelerating her progress by qualifying for the GB age group team in her first Olympic distance race, racing for GB out in Valencia, and then finally completing her first 70.3 out in Portugal, and in the process qualifying for the 70.3 World Championships. Now, it's easy to hear the headline figures of that and to think, oh, that, you know, it obviously comes easy to Pip. It doesn't come easy to me. I'm never going to qualify for the World Championships or whatever. But I encourage you to listen to Pip's story. She's super humble, nice person. She's worked really hard on particularly her biking and her running to get herself to the stage where she's at. And she really enjoys what she does, but she also gets pleasure from the process and pleasure from the outcome. So I encourage you to listen to the story from later on. She's a great team member. I've really enjoyed working with her over the last couple of years. So stick around and listen to that. Right. So before we go to the interview of the week, a little bit of news for you and races for 2022. I've been having a little nosy at the calendar, and I thought it'd be worth having a sit down and a recap of what's going to be happening in 2022, because I've had emails from the media team at Super League, at the PTO, at Ironman, with all the different events that are happening, and it suddenly struck me earlier on today that I had no idea how all of these individual events fit together on the calendar, and it was starting to feel quite hectic in my head. So there's all this stuff to look forward to next year. That's the headline figure for you. So first up, we had an email come through from Super League. They're going to be running a series of Arena Games races this year, and it's going to lead to a grand final. So April the 9th, it's going to take place in Munich, Germany. April the 23rd is going to take place in London, UK, at the London Aquatic Centre. And May the 7th is going to be the grand final out in Singapore. So we've got that to look forward to before the season proper kicks off. That's before we even start thinking about the WTCS races. We've also got the big Ironman races for next year. So to wrap up what's going on, Kona is going to be back to its usual slot. That's going to be the second weekend in October. So the women's race, if you remember, they've split the races this year. Women's race will be on Thursday, the 6th of October. Men's race will be on Saturday, the 8th of October. The 70.3 World Champs are going to be a couple of weeks after that. They're going to be 3 weekends after that, to be exact, the 29th and the 30th of October in St. George, Utah. And there's also going to be the delayed 2021 Ironman World Championships, also taking place in St. George, Utah. That's going to be on May the 7th. of this year. So we've got a May World Championships rolled over from October last year. Then we've got Standard Kona and the 70.3 World Champs 3 weeks after that. Now, layered on top of that and all of our usual big races, our big Ironmans and our Challenge Roths, we've also got the PTO announced events. The PTO have announced, as well as having the Collins Cup, they're launching their PTO World Open series. And there's going to be a Canadian Open, which will be taking place in Edmonton. That'll be on the 23rd and 4th of July. The Collins Cup will take place in San Marin again on the 20th of August. And then the US Open will take place in Dallas on the 18th of September. And they have plans to add an Asian Open and a European Open, but that won't happen until 2023. I've got an interview coming up next week for you with the PTO CEO, Sam Renouf. He's a really great guy. He's really passionate about the sport and growing the sport, and especially about both adding opportunities for age groupers and increasing the availability of prize funds and professional opportunities for the pro athletes. He's a really forward-thinking guy, really smart, really enjoyed our conversation. And their big announcement is that they're going to have age group racing taking place at both the Edmonton Canadian Open and the Dallas US Open. And that full announcement is going to be on next week's show. I've just recorded it earlier today. So there's going to be age group racing again. And that's going to be over two distances. They're going to have sprint distance races over a 500 meter, 20K, 4.5K course. And also over their standard PTO distance, which is 2K swim, 8K bike, 18K run, so 100K total distance. So you've got all that to look forward to. There's tons of stuff. And that's before we even start thinking about 70.3 races, the Ironman races, all the stuff that usually happens. And before we start thinking about the WTCS Pro Series that'll be happening for the Olympic distance and sprint distance, and the Super League series that will happen at the end of the season in the outdoor Super League races. So there's tons of stuff. It really feels like triathlon is on the up. The last few years have felt like peak triathlon. Every year has felt bigger than the ones before, pandemic aside. It feels like it's continuing to grow. And I really feel like after my conversation with Sam Renouf today, there's a real momentum here. There's a real feeling that huge, big money sponsors are getting on board with triathlon. They're seeing the potential for triathlon to be a kind of sport that goes to the masses, like golf, like tennis, that is packageable up, that will be put on television. And that's going to be good for us in two ways. Firstly, the more people that are talking about triathlon, the bigger triathlon is going to get and the more accepted it'll be. But also I think it's going to be good for us in that the PTO are talking about having events where the entry fees are significantly lower. They're not looking to subsidize the pro races, and the, if you like, the pro prize money pool isn't coming from the entry fees of age groupers. So watch this space for next week's episode when they haven't announced what the entry fees are going to be yet. Sam will talk about that on next week's show, but it's a significant break away from the kind of commercial models that we've seen so far. So watch this space. All right, before we go to this week's interview of the week, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors, precisionfuelandhydration.com. As you'll know, they've been with the show for over 6 years now. They've changed the name recently. You'll know them as Precision Hydration if you're a long-time listener. They changed the name to reflect the fact they've been helping athletes with both their fueling and their electrolyte hydration advice for a long time now. And as well as having electrolyte supplements available, they've also got gels and drink mixes, and they're awesome. We trialed a whole bunch of them through the last year with our team members. We had a bunch of stuff to try, and everybody loved the product. So it's really, really good stuff. Everyone sweats differently, and the amount of fuel we require is going to vary depending on factors like how long and how hard we're racing for or training for. So there's not like a one-size-fits-all approach. And if you're serious about your training and racing, go to the professionals. Go to precisionfuelandhydration.com. Use their free online sweat test, their free online quick carb calculator, and you get an understanding of your fluid, electrolyte, and carbohydrate needs during training and racing for your body type, for your events. Okay, it's as simple as that. You can even book a free one-to-one video consultation with the team to refine your hydration fueling strategy for your next race. So I love this company. They're a great gang of people. They've got brilliant products. I can't recommend them highly enough. And I don't say that lightly. I choose to work with them. I'm not working with them because it's a commercial arrangement. I just think they're the best in the business. So go over and check it out. PrecisionFuelandHydration.com. And if it's your first order, use the code OA22 at checkout for 15% off. All right. Now, before we go into talking about our interview of the week, I just want to give us a couple of shout outs to team members who've done really well. We've had a whole load of tests and training races and things happening in the team recently. So I want to give a shout out to a couple of people. To Steve Davison, he has had a 50-watt increase in his FTP since joining the team at the end of August. So a little bit over 6 months ago, his FTP's up 8 watts in this test. He's up 50 watts overall since August, though. So that's like a 30-odd% increase since joining the team. So congratulations, Steve. I'm really chuffed for you. And as well as that, his 10K time is down to 45.17 from 52.40 when he joined the team. So again, fantastic improvement. Really well done. Steve, you've really grafted away and you've got the training done week after week and you really deserve those improvements. Really chuffed for you. And also, a shout out to Tom Casey. He says, I'm genuinely blown away this morning by how effective the swim training with Team OA has been for me. Consistently trying to get 2 sessions a week and making a conscious effort to focus on the drill section of the session has put my CSS down from 203 to 154 in 8 weeks. So that's a 9-second improvement per 100 meters in his CSS pace. That's his pace at threshold, if you like, if you don't understand that terminology. So that's fantastic. That represents about a 40-second improvement in a 400-meter time, which is just brilliant. Tom, really chuffed for you, mate. Again, you've got that improvement by dedicating yourself and firstly doing the hard work, but doing the hard work in a smart way. Applying the right drills to your swim technique is often going to be the fastest way to improve your swimming, because it's not a matter with most of us as adult onset swimmers. It's not usually a case of needing to improve our fitness to get faster. Most of us have got like an invisible parachute dangling behind us in the water, and that parachute is made up of the stroke flaws that we've got. If you can fix the stroke flaw and in simple terms change how you move your body through the water, it's got the same equivalent of just getting a knife and cutting off one of those parachutes that's holding you back and creating drag through the water. So Tom, keep up the good work. There's no reason that can't be down significantly under 150 per 100 the next test in a couple of months' time. So awesome. Well done. And that leads us on nicely to our interview of the week with Pip Paxman. Pip, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. How are you doing today?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. Very well. How are you?
I'm great. Yeah, I've just been out for a little walk in the sunshine, which is nice. We're having quite a pleasant January at the moment. Snuck out for 15 minutes.
Good.
Get the steps in.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, even though it's cold, isn't it? It's cold but sunny. So it's
yeah, it's nice. Nice winter weather. How are you feeling? First and most importantly, I know you've just been on the recovery train from having COVID, aren't you? So that's the first thing. Have you bounced back?
Yeah. So I got COVID at the start of December and got it quite badly actually as well. So I was like lying on my sofa for pretty much a week, right. Solid, got all the can't taste, can't smell, didn't really have an appetite. And then my heart rate was just pinging every now and then. It would just go really, really high and like I could really feel it. Like I could feel it in like my ears. It was really strange. And I got out of breath really quick as well. We have like 5 steps in our house that take you to kind of the second bedroom and the like bathroom. And just going up those 5 steps to go and brush my teeth was pretty horrendous. I'd have to like sit on the side of the bath and get my breath back. It was bad. But I mean, I had a month off like you said, and slowly got back into it. I feel a lot better now. I still get a little bit nervous sometimes, especially in the pool. I can feel my heart rate monitor. I can kind of almost feel my heart in my heart rate monitor. And I think that's really strange. And just take it easy, really. Just slow it down. And it's been generally fine. yeah,
it's interesting, happy. Isn't it? How many people have had that experience of, like, by and large, generally, our team members are, you know, extremely fit relative to the general population, extremely fit relative to the triathlon population. Mm-hmm. To all of a sudden get an illness where you walk up a few stairs and you have to have a sit down like you're, you know, like you're a very elderly, frail person, yeah, is a real wake up call, isn't it?
It really is, because that's the thing. When I knew so many people who had it and were either fine, or those that weren't fine didn't really have, you know, they were going out a lot of nights a week drinking. And I kind of, when I got the positive result, I thought, oh, I'll be fine. I'll be okay. It's not really a big deal. And then, yeah, I was just completely wiped out. It really threw me back. And I was quite upset, to be honest, because I knew that I wouldn't be able to train. And I know, yeah, it sounds a little bit silly, but because, you know, you don't have any immediate races coming up. So in a way, it was kind of good that if I was going to get it was going to be in December, like off season. But like, coming back to it now, you can kind of see actually, like, physically on Training Peaks and on Strava, like, how much progress you've lost. And I know it will come back and work hard to get it back, but it's you know, not the most motivating.
It will come back. I think that's the thing you have to tell yourself, and that's got to be the message for everyone who's had it. Is, although COVID is different in that it's a new illness, I think our general approach to illness is our brain always tells us how much we've lost and how we're never going to get back to it. And then within a month of getting back to it, you kind of usually have forgotten you were ever ill. And it's only when you look back in your training diary where you go, oh yeah, I'd forgotten I had a week off with a cold, or 2 weeks off with the flu, or a chest infection, or whatever it is. I think the difference with COVID is it's in everybody's consciousness all the time, because you can't look at a newspaper or a website without constant headlines about it. So that reminds us that we've had it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you will make, well, I know you will make that ground back that you've lost. It's just in your face a lot more at the moment.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah, really true. I think, well, even I went for a cycle this weekend with some friends and actually out to Windsor, and there were a couple of people there that I knew, and they'd all had COVID as well. And we were all just sort of discussing how similar, like, that we'd had it. So they're very, again, very fit and healthy as well. And they've really been, like, knocked back by it. So it's quite comforting in a way to know,
yeah,
other people experiencing very similar things. And it's not just that, you know, oh
yeah, it's not just you.
Exactly. Yeah. You're not an anomaly. Well, yeah. So that was good, actually, in a weird way.
I think often as well within the fitness training triathlon type population, we are unusually in tune with our bodies. Like, we know, it sounds a bit hokey that, but what I mean by that is we're always training, so we're always in and out of breath, and we're always sort of comparing our paces or our power against our breathing and our heart rates. So we're really aware of it. And any small thing in training that, you know, oh, I'm 10 watts down or 5 seconds up or whatever in power and pace, you kind of attune to looking for that. And so you're very aware of it when all of a sudden, like, I'm riding and I should be feeling like this, and I'm only doing, you know, in my case, I was doing like 15 kilometers an hour on the bike and kind of going, I'm going to check that the brakes aren't rubbing again. But I think you just have to accept it's good that you're moving again. Yeah. And it'll come back in a period of time, because, you know, some people get this really badly. Obviously, it can be and it's a wake up call, isn't it? Because as you said, a lot of people's feeling on this is, well, I had it, my mate had it, I had a cold for a day and I got better, no big deal. But when somebody gets it and they're really ill, it makes you realize you could be really ill with this. It could be a really long-term thing.
Yeah. And I think that's what freaked me out the most, was if this stays around and I carry on feeling like this, like, I don't think I can, I don't know. It wasn't even really worth thinking about too much, because as well as, like, doing triathlon to, you know, win and do well, it's also sort of a mental, like a break for me. Like, I work and then I'll get on the bike, or I'll go for a run or go for a swim, and it lets me, like, unwind. And I was finding in that month that I wasn't doing, you know, being active, that things were winding me up more, and I was overthinking a lot. And it's not something that I didn't ever really recognize that before. I think I knew that I was doing exercise for mental health benefits as well, but I didn't really realize the impact of what that exercise has on a day-to-day sort of life kind of thing. And so, especially with things going on at, you know, at work or with family over Christmas, I have two younger sisters, so they know exactly how to wind me up. And if I haven't exercised, then it's a lot easier for them.
Yeah, it's like your natural pressure release valve. A lot of us who exercise a lot have found this. It's our way of letting the steam out of the situation. And it's only when that gets taken away and you realize the effect it usually has on you has been taken away and you can't do it, that's when you're left with facing, oh, well, here I am with my own thoughts and what do I do now, kind of thing. Yeah. So how did you deal with it then? This might be interesting for, it's great this, we haven't even gone in the direction I thought the conversation was going to go, but how did you react and change then to 4 weeks of not being able to exercise? What did you find worked for you?
So, yeah, it's quite a good question. So obviously we had to isolate for 10 days and had to stay indoors. We do have a little garden. So I was going out, but it was more kind of, I did some yoga. That was something that I don't normally do yoga. Like I'll stretch and that will kind of be that. But it was, to be honest, it was really just yoga and calling up friends. That was the other thing I did a lot of, was just talking or listening to friends, because actually even talking for too long I'd go out of breath. So listening to other people and what other people were doing and you know, them enjoying their time, I think started off really well. And then when I was talking to other sort of triathletes and they were saying, oh, I went out for a really long ride at the weekend, I think after about 8 or 9 days of listening to that, I was a bit like, I still can't do that. So I sort of stopped doing that kind of towards the end. But it's really hard to say what helped, because I just felt awful. So
It's hard, isn't it, when you feel really ill, and that's the first phase of it. You feel so ill that you can't exercise, even if you could. You couldn't do it, you wouldn't want to, and yet you still don't have the pressure release. So there's that phase of it. And then there's the feeling a bit better physically and climbing the walls mentally and still not being able to exercise phase.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously we did get there, and I did leave as soon as I sort of came out of isolation. I did pop back home because it was very close to Christmas. So I had a couple of days after isolation, got back down. I lived down south, went back home, and it's just a whole different world when you go back home to your parents and sort of in that like safe environment. We have dogs as well. So it was like going out for dog walks. I think that sort of got me over this whole, like not being able to really exercise, but I could go out and watch them run around as well, which was weirdly, I was like, oh, that's nice. It's, you know, calming in a way. But so it was a hard one.
I'm a big believer in the purposeful outdoor walk in nature. And if you've got dogs, even better. But I think even if you approach with an athlete's mindset originally and you go out and say, right, I'm going to purposefully walk from here to there through the forest, that's enough to get you into the forest. And then like being in nature is really good for us, whether we can understand it or explain it or not. It just has a calming effect on everyone I speak to. They kind of go, yeah, whatever, hippie coach, I don't want to go for a walk in the forest. And then they do it and they go, yeah, weirdly, I felt really good at the end of that. And like, I don't know why, but I know it works. So go do it.
yeah, absolutely. I actually looked into that a little while ago because there's a project that I run with a friend that kind of tries to encourage people to get outside and ideally get on a bike. And so I was like, well, why exactly are we doing this? Is there a scientific reason? And I can't say that I really got to the bottom of it, but there is a lot to do with trees. And I'm guessing like maybe oxygen levels or just there was a lot of information about trees being able to sort of get, like something's absorbed by us.
It makes us feel good at the very basic level. And that's reason enough to do it, isn't it? It'd be dead interesting to know if they've managed to study it and isolate like the scientific, well, there are negative ions coming off or whatever it might be, you know. But for me, it's enough to go, well, do you know what? It's a sunny day. The trees are out there. I'm going to go for a walk through them. And I always, always feel better when I come back.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe there's the lesson of COVID for you. Maybe it's go for more walks in the trees and turn to that first before the exercise bike. Maybe that's it, Pip.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, listen, let's go back then. We've done like a 10-minute intro on COVID, yeah, and how you've been ill and you've recovered now. Let's go back to the start. How did you end up in triathlon in the first place? What was your sporting background as a kid?
Yeah, so when I was a lot younger, I played a lot of netball and a lot of hockey. And I continued playing hockey at Loughborough University. And I loved it. But then I left and came to work in London. And after about a year or two in London, I wasn't doing any exercise. I was going to the gym, but I was nowhere near as fit as what I was when I was playing hockey.
Yeah.
And I think I was going through a bit of a strange time where I was sort of at a lull at work, and just everything was just a bit like meh. And one of my friends actually said, oh, let's go. And we were discussing, you know, having these lulls, and he said, oh, let's go and do an Ironman. And I thought, brilliant, yes. So I immediately said yes, and then realized I don't own a bike. I don't really like running more than 5K if I have to. And I haven't swam since I was about like 14 to 16, sort of that like age. And anyway, so what we did is we signed up for the sprint triathlon in London. We went there. I bought a bike a week before.
Solid preparation. Yeah, like
really
it.
Good effort. Yeah. And and it was off Facebook Marketplace, and it was only £160, but I mean I still have it. I don't use it so much because the brakes are just dead. But we did that, and it was really, really good fun. First time swimming in open water as well, in like the Victoria Docks, which I don't know if you've been to, but
I've seen them, but not been in. Yeah, let's put it that way. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Not Mother Nature's finest open water swim experience, right?
No, not. It wasn't amazing. It tasted weird as well. It tasted like really sweet.
You don't want to think about that too much.
No, you don't. Yeah, I tried not to. I mean, my focus was on just getting around, to be honest. I was just trying to follow people's feet. But I mean, it was great, and I really did enjoy it. And I enjoyed cycling, which was something I'd never really done before. So that was great. So anyway, then we decided, right, let's book an Ironman, like, or maybe we'll book a half and just make sure, because it's quite a jump, you know, riding 180K, running a whole marathon, like, let's just test the waters a bit more. So we did book a 70.3 that got moved because of COVID. And that, it kind of just went on from there. And I think I did, what did I do? I think at this, because I joined TOA at the start of 2020. And I think just before then, I did another triathlon, I think in Birmingham, I have a feeling. And I was like, I could be quite good at this, actually. Like, this is really good fun. I want to get better. And I love the cycling side of it. I really struggle on the run, and the swim's generally okay, but it's just the open water bit that I think I struggle with, because I have like a little panic every time I get into open water. That kind of goes away after about 5-10 minutes. So it's just controlling that is a bit of a struggle.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, that's basically it. It was kind of signing up, looking to sign up for a full, and then sort of doing the 70.3 along the way. And I mean, the 70.3 got moved, I think, three times. And it was originally going to be in Marbella. Then they said, we do a one in Portugal in October. And me and my friend went, COVID will be done by then. Like, let's just go to the one in Portugal. Obviously, it wasn't, and that was then moved. And then I think that was then moved again to its original October date. So so I did that a couple of months ago. So yeah.
So had you originally entered your 70.3 for sort of April of 2020, and you ended up doing it in October of 21?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's surreal. Yeah, it really was, wasn't it?
Yeah, but that's fine. Loads of time to train. So
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And along the way, you also... So where did you qualify for GB? Because I think you'd already qualified for GB when you joined up with us. Or maybe it was just after you joined. And I think I got an email saying, oh, I've just qualified for GB in this race that I did. Is that good? I was like, yeah, that's great. Well done.
That was in, I think that was the Birmingham one.
Right. So you qualified there. And then that ended up being Valencia in yes. the summer of this year, didn't it? This year just gone, 21.
Yeah, that was good fun, actually. I was really nervous, but it was really good fun. I really enjoyed it. And you got to watch the elite race. I think they were after, that was amazing. Like, so much motivation just came off after that race, just because you're watching, you've done the same course that these guys are doing, and they're doing it so much quicker. And if they can do it, like, why can't you do it? It was insane. But putting on like GB kit, age group kit, and sort of standing there with everyone else who, you know, have all the gear, and it's your first time, it was quite nerve-wracking. But there were some people in TOA actually that reached out and sort of said, good luck, Pip, and, you know, don't be nervous, like, you've earned your spot there. You know, they were so encouraging. So I'm really, really grateful. Like Nat in particular. Yeah. She's great. And
did you have a bit of imposter syndrome when you went, then? It sounds like, did you feel a bit sort of, because it sounds like you were very sporty. You had been really sporty through university, and then you take up a new sport. It's interesting. I've just been talking with the CEO of PTO for an episode that'll be out in a couple of weeks. And his big thing that he's pushing, and he's right, Sam kept saying, triathletes are like super athletes. They are, like, at the elite level, they are as good as pro swimmers, as pro bikers, as pro runners, and they do it all in the same race. Mm. And the general population don't know that. They think it's like a whole separate sport, and have got no concept that Alex Yee could be in the 10K, or Lucy Charles Barkley could be in the 1500 meters open water pool swim at the Olympics, or very close to that standard. Mm. And I kind of think it's the same with age groupers, but we recognize it even less. So you've come from playing like a good standard of hockey and netball, but didn't realize you could be international standard at triathlon. And it's a sport that it kind of rewards all of those attributes you've built along the way. And you've obviously got natural ability as well, but it just rewards bloody hard work and bloody mindedness at the end of the day, that if you get the training done and you've got a bit of talent, then you're going to get really good really quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think imposter syndrome is probably, like, looking back, probably the right term for it. But I think it was just also because during COVID, to qualify for the GB age group, it was slightly different. So I think at the moment, you have a couple of events that you can qualify at, and then you submit your time, and it has to be within the fastest, you know, whatever it is. Whereas during COVID, they opened it up to as many events as, you know, if you could do a triathlon and you could get within a certain percentage of the winner of your age group, then you qualified for the GB age group team. And I think part of that was in my mind, because I was a bit like, am I good enough to be here? Because I didn't qualify in the same way that other people would have done, you know, years before or the years after. So I think there was that. I mean, regardless, had a great time, and it's an experience at the end of the day. So, and it was a bit of a holiday, like, I hadn't gone abroad at all because of COVID. So yeah. I was like, well, you know, it's a bit of sun.
Everybody at a world championships, bar maybe the top 1%, everybody's got imposter syndrome. Everybody's got a story. Like, everyone I've ever talked to about qualifying for GB or Kona or 70.3 or whatever, they've all had a little lucky break that's made them go, yeah, but I only really qualified because, you know, I know this guy or this girl, and she got a puncture, or she would have beaten me if she'd not had a bad hamstring. Or, like, everybody kind of plays themselves down in their own mind and gets to the start line of the world champs or the Euros and says, well, everyone else really deserves to be here except me. I'm going to get found out. But I think everybody's genuinely thinking that.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest. But yeah, I definitely felt like that. Yeah.
And it went well. You had a decent race, didn't you?
Yeah, I think it was pretty good. To be honest, it went by really fast. The swim was amazing. It's the first time I've got in the sea into like an open water swim and not freaked out. So right. I had quite a good swim. I mean, other than it being quite busy with people in it, it was quite a good swim. And then the bike, I loved the bike. The bike course was just amazing. And then the run was an absolute slog. I have like blanked out the run because I just remember being in quite a lot of pain and just being like, please just make this be over. But I think I did get a bit of like calf cramp as well around that course. So I think that might be why, but yeah, need to work on the running, I think. It's in order, but yeah, it was an amazing race and it was hot as well. It was really hot. Yeah. And I think I do a lot better in hot weather than cold weather. So okay. I was quite grateful for that because I had some friends who were also racing and they don't do so well in hot weather. So it was quite nice to be like, oh, I have like a little advantage here. But I mean, yeah, it's just one of those things, isn't it?
Yeah, that's awesome. So there's takeaways for people that if you qualify for GB Vest, even if it's a roll down, even if it's an email later in the day from a manager saying, hey, someone's dropped out, take the place and go and do it. Because yeah. I mean, you never know. It might be the only chance you ever get, right? You might go 10 times, but for a lot of people I know who've been, they've gone with a kind of, I'll just go and experience it. And then next time I'll be really well prepared or, you know,
yeah.
And they've never ended up going again. So it's awesome. You had a great experience and you really enjoyed the day when you were there.
Yeah, no, thanks. And also it was just the, like I said, afterwards being so motivated after that to go into a month later, the 70.3, I think it really helped because I just loved training and I just, every time I was training, I was like, oh, could you push it a little bit like harder? Like this is all going to pay off in October. You may as well just keep, you know, keep going yeah. and see what you can do. I think that I really benefited from the motivation after that race, I think. Yeah.
I think that's also one of the really big benefits of doing a couple of B races on the way to your A race, if you like, of approaching stuff as a, well, I'll do this and I'm 100% invested in that one down the line, but I'll do this one. They can often fuel the fire much more than just trying to train all the way to the event without doing anything on the way there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such a good kind of indicator of where you're at as well, because you could train really hard and be really good in training, but like transition, I feel is like almost a fourth sport of triathlon, because transition sometimes goes horribly wrong or goes really, really smoothly. And it's just, you've got to get like consistent with that. And that's something you can't really do. There's obviously things you can do to practice outside of the race, but you can never really practice a transition unless you're doing the race. I find anyway.
The pressure of it is a thing that's hard to replicate, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, in the 70.3, I lost my bike for a couple of minutes.
No.
And I was just running around like, because they didn't give the numbers. You know, normally you get like a sticky number on your leg or your arm.
Yeah.
They didn't have that. So I couldn't find my number on me and I had a 4-digit number. And I was like, was I 1163 or was I 1631? Like, no. I just couldn't remember at all. So I was just running down the aisles like, where's my bike? And I think there were a couple of other girls also doing the same. So we were just like headless chicken. But again, you can't practice that. That is like a experience on the day sort of thing.
Yeah. 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 Hey, well, listen, talk us through 70.3 Portugal then from the point of view of first 70.3. Obviously, we've had the COVID lockdown and you've not been able to travel abroad more than once in an 18-month period. Talk us through the whole event, because there'll be people listening who have got this experience coming to them this year. They've got the first 70.3 or even Ironman lined up. They haven't traveled abroad. They haven't packed the bike into a box. So go through the whole process for us.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So we, with the bike boxes, so preparation for getting out there, we booked the bike boxes really far in advance. Which was a really good move because they did run out really quick from what I hear. And then, something we actually learned from Valencia. So I live with my boyfriend who also is a triathlete, and he has these Garmin pedals or something, and you need like a special tool to get the pedal off.
Yeah.
Didn't have that tool. And on the night before that we were due to get like a 4 a.m. flight out to Valencia, he's going, I can't get the pedal off. Oh my goodness, like panic stations. And we missed the flight in the morning and had to get a flight in the evening. It was honestly, it was a very tense time between both of us. Yeah. So we learned to go and buy that tool and things like that. So I'd say if you've got like special things on your bike or whatever, like that's definitely something to consider.
They've changed that in the latest version of them, that for that very reason, there used to be a very specific like Garmin. We used to have a list in the club of people who had them back in the day, like who's got the special spanner. Oh, but yeah, that's something to be well aware of and know that stuff in advance. And especially I'd even say to people listening, like when you get your bike for the first time, get the spanner to take the pedals off, whether it's an Allen key or a spanner, take it off straight away and grease the threads of it and then put them back on. Because if it's been put together in a shop quickly without grease on the threads, they can just like, they can basically weld themselves in there. So you'll never get them off.
Yeah. It was
one of those experiences, was it? Just
it was. It's something that will hopefully never happen again.
At what point did you realize you weren't going to make the flight then? Or was it a conscious, we just can't go because we can't get the pedals off?
It was probably, about 11, like just before midnight. We're like, our taxi's coming in a couple of hours and we can't get this bike in the box. Nowhere's open, obviously, at that time. That was kind of, it was just game over. And then we sort of said, you could go and, I could go and get the flight and that'd be fine, but it would mean getting the flight by myself, paying a taxi to the airport by myself. I was like, do you know what? By the time we've done it individually, we're going to have spent more than if we just both go. It was one of those. It's a very steep learning curve, that one. But
a relationship builder.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. But going to Portugal, it was quite a good practice run, really, for Portugal, going to Valencia the month before. But we got there all okay to Portugal. We booked a Bilingo sort of style taxi that could fit both our bike boxes in and take us to our Airbnb that we'd booked. I know a lot of people were staying in hotels that were like bike friendly. But I would say a lot of people that we knew who were out there as well had problems with the taxis, because getting a bike box into a standard taxi, as well as yourself and maybe anyone that you've got with you, is quite difficult. But we had a lady that she was great. She was Portuguese. She was local to the area and she just ran us around in her little taxi, and it was just great. So if you can prearrange that, I think that takes out a lot of stress, I think, because that's one of the things I stress about, is just like the logistics, especially with a bike box. Anyway, we had a couple of days before. So I think you register on sort of the Thursday or the Friday, and then they had the full Ironman on the Saturday. Which again, we got up to go and watch the start of that, and that was incredible. And it just made me want to go and do a full like there and then. I was like, I kind of want to race this now. Because the presenter guy who talks over the music and he's going for it. And I was like, I'm gonna cry. Like, I'm not even racing. I feel so emotional. But anyway, it got to our day on the Sunday and it started at 10, which I was like, oh, this feels late for a for a race. I sort of thought this is going to mean that the run is going to be in the heat of the day.
Yeah. Was that because of tides? Was it a tidal thing?
I don't know. I really don't know. I guess I was in the mind frame of like, it's at 10, that's it. Like,
right,
you're doing it. I don't know if it was to do with tides.
Was it wave starts?
Yes. I don't know. So they did. If I explain it to you, you can tell me if it's a wave start, because I'm not entirely sure if I know what you mean. But it basically was just six of you. So you're all in these groups.
So it was like rolling starts, six at a time, and you go. Yeah, so it takes a while to get through. Still, it's unusually late, that, isn't it, when you think of the 6 a.m. start that you'd usually have in big races. Yeah,
that's what I thought as well. So I'm not entirely sure what the reasoning was, but...
There we go.
That was that.
It is what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And it was, I think, like I said, like open water swimming is probably mentally the most challenging one that I have, because I know I can do it. It's just actually focusing and getting the breathing under control. So going into that, I was really nervous and just ran into the water and was like, right, just use the nerves, attack it, like just go for it, and then kind of get into your rhythm and go. And it was a fairly decent swim. The course is, it was quite hard to see the buoys at different points. I think there were like boats, there were some boats in the way, and you had to sort of do a bit of navigating and following other people's feet and stuff like that. But it was generally quite a nice swim. And then getting out, you get out and you have to go straight up this quite a steep ramp in your wetsuit, trying to get it all off, and like people trying to take photos, and it felt like carnage at the time. And then you've got quite a long run from there to the transition area. I can't remember, they said it was 600 meters, but it felt way longer than 600 meters. And it was good because you have the crowd all around you cheering and cheering and cheering, and you've got your name on your number belt thing, and everyone's going, oh, go Philippa, and you can hear TOA people going, go Pip, go Pip. So that was good, like that felt good. And then, like I said, I lost my bike, so I was running around trying to find my bike. And then when I did find it, just got on with it. And you go up this, you start off out of transition and you go along the coastline, and it's beautiful. And then it starts to climb, and it starts quite gradual, and it is quite gradual with a couple of points that sort of, you know, get a bit steeper. There's also like patches of cobblestones as well, which I can't imagine agreed with everyone's like bikes. And I'm sure there were people that got caught out with punctures on those. Luckily I wasn't one of them, but you kind of go then through all this foresty area. And I think it's up towards, I can't remember the name of it now. Sintra, I think is the name of the little town. Okay. It goes up towards that, and it's beautiful. Like it's so scenic. And I know you probably should be, you know, head down going for it, but I was like, oh wow, like look where we are. And then as you get towards the very end, you just see this really steep, it just goes straight up. I can't even like describe it. And you're watching other cyclists going up it, and you're like, oh god, they look like they're struggling, oh my goodness. And at the top of that is the aid station, so you're like out of breath trying to grab a Gatorade or a little cup of Coke or something and a banana. So that was good. And actually trying to get stuff off the aid station when you're cycling along is also a bit of a skill in itself as well.
It's another one to practice there, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like chucked one of my own water bottles like out and took a Gatorade in. I was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that I've got rid of my water bottle. And it was fairly easy to part with, isn't it? But at the time I was just like, am I really going to do this? And then am I allowed as well is another thing. But and then you just go straight down, and it's like full speed straight down the hill. It's insane.
How far into the bike lap is the steep hill?
I think you get to the top of the steep hill at about 30k.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I think that's about right. And then you go straight down, and then it's pretty much flat and all along the coast. And it stays pretty flat. So it's a nice
scenic.
Yeah.
Change of terrain. So the 70.3 course then is different to the full course. You don't go up and onto the motor racing track bit. And
oh, you do that. No, oh, you do that. Yeah. But you
so
only
what
do
was that
once.
Bit like?
That was so cool. It was so cool. It was very smooth. And actually, surprisingly, I kind of would have thought a motor racing track would be flat, but actually it has got some hill in it. And I was quite surprised by that. But and trying to, you can see the tire tracks of where, you know, to take the, it's called like the racing line or whatever, so you can get the quickest route through, which was good. There are a lot of like men on TTs, like really, really going for it and really like shouting at each other in a very jokey sort of way, which was really nice. I know you're racing, but it was really like nice to like have a little laugh as well. So no, that was really cool. Actually, I can't believe I forgot about that. But yeah, and then the run. So this was the first half marathon I've ever done, so I was pretty nervous about even like finishing it. But you kind of come out of transition, and then they've got these little showers so you can run through the water, which was nice. And then you're going up along again along the coast on the map that you read, you know, the pre-reading stuff. It says the elevation's not really that, you know, nothing to worry about. You don't look at it and go, oh, I should be concerned about this. But okay. It's very gradual, but it does gradually go up and you do really start to feel it. And then it goes down again. And then you get to the end and you turn back around on yourself and you're just doing two laps. And the first lap, I was at like a block, like I just mentally blocked because I just was like, I don't think I can do this. This is a long way to go. I've got to do this again. Again, got to an aid station. I did walk a little bit there and I was like, right, just shut up. You've got this far. Just do it. And then you go back into the town and you've got the crowds of people there and they're all cheering for you and they're all like just happy and loud. And then you run back up the hill, back into the coastline, and you've got that kind of momentum. And actually the second lap was so much easier than the first lap. And then you come back in and you go back into the town to the finish line. And it just, I mean, I cried across the finish line, which I I never imagined I'd be that like emotional about it, but I was so happy to have finished. I was just, the other thing I didn't mention was my boyfriend, who was also racing, he crashed his bike about 2K after transition. He was fine.
Oh no.
But I saw him as I was going out and I was like, because I put my brakes on, I was like, what's going on? Why aren't you on your bike? And saw he'd crashed and he was like, no, go. Like, I'm fine. And you know, the whole way around, I was thinking, is he, you know, what's going on? Like, is he all right? You have all these things going on. And actually he has a TT bike, which I don't have and or didn't at the time. And I was so glad because when you go down that hill, you go down so fast. And I know he would have blitzed it down there. And I worry about him a little bit. So I was quite glad in a way that he didn't even get a chance to come off his bike down the hill and he was just there. Like, I was like, at least he's safe. But yeah, so I think when I came across the line, I was like, oh, I can go and see what's happened. And it was just, and just relief. Like, I've done a 70.3, like all you've been training for is it's done. And now, I mean, maybe not at this point, but I was like, maybe 5 minutes later, sort of going, right, where's the full Ironman going to be then? Like, where are we booking next? So it was just a feat, like such a, like, just excitement and like sense of accomplishment. And yeah, it was just a great feeling. I can't even really put it into words, to be honest. But
no, it's good.
Yeah, I did love it. And I think I got a bit of a bug for it now. So yeah, we'll see what happens this year. So yeah.
So what is on the horizon for this year then? Obviously, having been bitten by the bug for the 70.3, originally the plan was we're going to do an Ironman. So
Got Switzerland booked.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think that's... Is it like June, I think? Could be June, could be July. I would need to...
It is the 10th of July, yeah.
July, okay, cool. Got an extra month and what, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait to do that. It's going to be quite hilly, which is fine. I quite like hills now. When I first started, so very, very early days, I absolutely hated hills. Anything to do with a hill, I was like, absolutely no interest in. But it turns out I'm pretty good at going up a hill. So may as well have a course that's to your advantage, won't you? So Switzerland will be good. I think it looks beautiful as well. And I've got a friend who lives out there who's doing it with me. So I'm going to see her over there.
Amazing.
So we're sort of a bit of motivation for each other. So that's the full. See how that goes. And then in October, I've got the Utah 70.3 World Champs based off Portugal. So
not only did you have a decent first experience, but you got the slot for St. George 70.3 World Champs there as well.
Yeah, which is insane. Like, it doesn't really feel...
So at what point
real.
Did that sink in for you then? Was it all done via email, I suppose, this year? There wasn't an award ceremony and the whole roll down thing yet.
no, there was, it's just an email that came through, and I sort of looked at it and went like, what's this? And then, and then I just read it and was like, oh my gosh. And sent it to my family, and they were like, oh, well done. Like, they're not in the world of triathlon. So they were just like, okay, cool. Sounds good. And you have like, I think 2 days to book your space, or like to confirm and pay entry and whatever it is. So then I think it didn't really settle in or like sink in for me, probably for like a couple of days, like a week or so. And I started telling people at work, and then that's when it sort of was like, oh my God, I'm going to this thing. And then I think, I can't remember which pro athlete posted about it. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's the thing. I just couldn't believe it. So I think that's when it really was like,
nothing hasn't quite settled in yet, hey?
Yeah.
Well, the good thing is it's post Ironman, so it'll be like an end of season party for you, if that's the way you look at it. You'd be super fit off the back of Ironman Switzerland and rest up, recover up, train for fun, go to the World Champs and enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the main aim of Utah. It's going to be enjoying it and just soaking it all in, I think.
So, nice. Yeah,
very excited.
Hey, well, look, that's a good wrap to the interview, I think. That's a great story of from never having done triathlon, not owning a bike, not enjoying running very much, to qualification for GB and the 70.3 World Champs. That's a cracking story, Pip.
Yeah, thanks.
So leave us with this, and for the people listening, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. One big learning or takeaway for you in your triathlon training over the past couple of years. What's been the one change that you've made that you think has contributed to your success?
I think it is more of a mental thing. Well, one of the things I've been focusing on since I started really is like believe in yourself. And I know that sounds really like cliche and a bit, you know, soft or whatever, but there's a lot of times where I've gone into races or even into some of the training sessions and gone like, I'm not going to finish this. Like, I'm not, you know, and this isn't for me, or maybe not this isn't for me, but this isn't the day for me to be doing well or whatever. And sometimes I try and make excuses and go like, oh, I've had a really hard day at work and I've done this and done that. But actually, I think like holding yourself accountable and believing in yourself and that you can do it and that you're doing it for, you know, you're doing it for yourself at the end of the day. Like, you're not getting paid to be a triathlete. So you just want to make sure you're enjoying it. And you don't enjoy it if you don't believe in yourself, if that makes sense, if you don't have the confidence in yourself. So I'd say, like, always back yourself and like work hard. I'd say is the working nice. Hard. Working hard pays off as well. That's another big thing I think in triathlon, is you can tell who's putting the work. But yeah, that's probably a bit muffled and sort of going.
No,
back,
it's
like,
good
going around the point. But
it's two very simple but important and not easy points. Work hard and believe in yourself. It sounds really easy on paper. But actually putting it together at the end of a hard day when your boss has been a pain in the backside and you don't feel well and the back door needs fixing and, you know, yeah, and all that stuff can get in the way and you just think, oh, I won't train today.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's good. Yeah. Very wise, young Pip. Very wise. Wise you are in the ways of the triathlon world. All right. That's awesome. Thank you very much for your time, Pip. We'll wish you all the best of luck for Ironman Switzerland and 70.3 World Champs next year.
Thank you very much, Rob. Thanks for having me.
I love that. Work hard and believe in yourself. That's two very good lessons for us to take away from that. Loved that interview with Pip. It's great to have somebody on who's come into triathlon relatively late in life, who's discovered that they've got some talent at this, but most importantly, they've discovered that the really hard work that they do is paying off in a linear fashion, that every time you sit down and you get on the turbo and you graft away, you start carving away at those times and you start improving your performance, and you can really see that improvement happening on a week by week, month by month basis.
So if you're out there and you're grafting away and you want to see those results, just keep on working. I think that's the lesson from today's episode. All right, if you are interested in finding out more about coaching with Team Oxygen Addict, dead simply, there's a link in the show notes you can click. You can book a call with me or Andy and have a chat with us about your goals for next year. Tell us a bit about your triathlon background and we'll work out whether you're a good fit for us, for our team, the way we coach athletes and the way we help people get what they want out of themselves. I've had a ton of calls recently off some of the work we've been doing with the Outlaw series, and a thread that's run through nearly almost all of the calls that I've had, probably 80% of the calls, people have said, do you know, I've listened to the podcast week after week after week for the last 2 or 3 years. And every time I hear you say, you know, book a call with us and chat through with us, and I've never got around to it. I've always felt like I should do it. And then I've thought better of it and I've ended up not doing it and I've put it off. And I don't know why I've waited. I don't know why I've waited so long to book a call and have a chat with you, because at the end of the day, we're never going to find out where we can help, whether we can help get you where you want to go unless we sit down and we have a chat about it. So again, the link's in the show notes to book a Zoom call with me and Andy. It's no obligation. And I do genuinely mean that. It's not a sales call. It's a working out if we can help you get what you want. So that's good. You've got that there. And also you can use the code OA22 at precisionfuelandhydration.com for 15% off your first electrolyte order. So use that if you're getting yourself any snacky goodies, any energy gels, energy drink, and electrolytes to help you in your training over the coming months. All right. So until next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. See ya.